Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, I've got a question for you. When is the last time that you talked to someone and they said, you know, I can't help you, but here's another guy, give him my name, and he'll take care of you?
Oh, huh. Yeah, I guess I've gotten that once or twice in the last 6 months.
Yeah, I find that to be like one of the most exciting things when there's like a guy who knows a guy that he's going to get you connected with.
Yeah.
It immediately makes my like GM brain just like kind of light on fire, because it's like, oh, this is, I'm getting a side quest right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for various reasons, I needed to get a suit this week, sort of on short notice. So I went to Men's Warehouse, right? Which I learned recently, this took me way too long to realize, it's spelled W-E-A-R, house, like where, warehouse, like you're wearing. Yeah, so very clever bit of marketing that apparently sailed past me for like 20 years straight. Anyway, so I went there, and so I got in there, and it was like, there's a super long line. I was like, what in the world is going on? And I finally got like someone to come help me. He's like, oh, like, we don't have anything in stock right now. It's the middle of prom season. I'm like, oh, prom, you know, prom season. He's like, and weddings are coming up. I'm like, oh, okay. Like this makes more sense. So he tried to show me around their stock, and he's like, I really just don't have anything to you, but I'll tell you what, like, you go, so not today, tomorrow, go to, Louis's like menswear or something like that. He's like, you go in there, you tell him Marty sent me. He's got all these suits. You want to go just to the right. As soon as you walk in and you look at those suits, like, those ones are going to be cheaper. You just, yeah, tell Louis, he'll take care of you. I'm like, great. I'm going to go.
Oh my goodness.
I'm going to Louis. Yeah. So, I mean, I walk in and I just like, you know, go in, I do what he says. Like, you know, I went the next day, and like, I went, found like, you know, Louis himself came kind of like waltzing out and introduced himself. You know, he's a tailor. So he had like this thing on his wrist that just had like pins sticking out of it. Right. Like,
oh,
just
wow.
Like looked exactly, you know, he had like a tape measure. He immediately like whipped out to like get my measurements and stuff like that. And yeah, he was like, how did you hear about me? I'm like, well, I was at Men's Warehouse, and Marty said, come find Louie. And he was just like, oh, Marty, like, I love Marty. Right. You know?
Yeah. That, so off we went from there. The most cinematic thing happening in real life that I've ever heard. Was there a guy at the front that's like, hey, boss, we got a guy here who says he wants to talk to Louis.
He wants to talk to Louis. Says he knows Marty. Yeah. I mean, it felt like that, right? Like, it felt like you are giving your players, like, you know, clues, you know, on their journey, right, on their little side quest. It's like, yeah, like, you're going to go to the city, you know, not, you know, city in the morning, you know, go find Louis, and you're like, he'll get you set up. And it's like, oh, like, what's this guy going to be like, you know?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was really fun. Yeah, and I just, I've come to a point in my life too where I really appreciate the, like, when you are put in a position where you can't research something, you just have to go kind of trust the guy, right? Cause like, again, I don't have a ton of time to do this, right? So like, you know, I can't go on the internet and research like how to get the best suit, and, you know, cause I don't have the time to do it. Yeah. So I just walk in and I'm just like, I'm totally at this guy's mercy. In and out in 20 minutes. He's like, oh, that was fast. I'm like, you're the best. Like, that's why, like, you know, I asked the one other person, he said, you're the best. And so I came there. Yeah, but it was, again, it really fun. Like, yeah, so just like, it made me think about like, yeah, side quests in games, and like how those can be a very enjoyable diversion to sort of your main quest. And like, I don't know, just having like almost like these like larger than life NPCs that maybe all they're into is suits, right? You know, or all they're into is like the shop that they're keeping up. It's like, you could just have a lot of fun with that. And it doesn't need to be this big extended thing. It's like, you don't, you know, you're not going to like have Louis join your, you know, join your party from then on out. It's just like, yeah,
right, you're
going there for the specific thing.
Yeah. It's, that sort of thing. I feel like it could add some depth to sort of like the economy in a town.
Mm-hmm.
If you think not just, you know, who sells what, who runs which business, but what are those kind of, very real, but maybe not out on the surface, needs that an economy has, you know,
like how
do you get your suit when it's prom season? Right.
Yeah.
Obviously the economy will have solved this problem in some way, and it's going to be in some weird kind of, you know, semi off the grid, thing. By the way, I mean, there's like a 30% chance we just never heard from you again. Like,
yes, scene, yes, yeah.
Said something about he was going to go see Louis.
Yes. Yeah, it sort of reminded me of like, like the John Wick movies.
I was thinking John Wick, doesn't this feel like a John Wick scenario somehow?
It does, absolutely.
Like off to the side of the suits, Louis has a bunch of katanas or something.
Yeah, yeah. And for all I know, maybe he does, like, right? I did not ask him about his katana selection. But yeah, he, like, it, you know, again, my price range was not the same as John Wick's price range, right? So like there was a little bit of awkwardness where I was like, the suit is very nice and I like how it looks on me, but I can't pay.
Yeah, does this suit cost $30
because yes, that's yeah, like. Yeah, that's where we need to go down in price range. Yeah, but it did make me think, like, how fun would it be, you know, to sort of exist in that world where you can just go to, like, you can go to the katana salesman, right, who, like, has the secret katana that, like, it's the best one that you will ever find, and it's going to cost you some obscene amount of money, but you don't care because you need the best one, right?
Yeah,
right. And, like, there's just, like, the John Wick universe, I feel like, has so many of those NPCs where it's just like, what is this guy doing all day, right? Like, he's only selling, you know, like, these suits, these, like, Kevlar lined suits or whatever to assassins. It's like, how many of those are you selling a year? Really? Like, you know, yeah. So, like, how much of your day to day is spent just sort of sitting around waiting for John Wick to show up?
Yeah. Well, you know, it also makes me think of, you know, like, towns that will have maybe one economy for, like, tourists and another economy for locals or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, where you go to get your whatever, your broadswords or something, is a matter of, like, how deeply connected are you to this place? Like, so I don't know. I think there's some kind of cool stuff in there for gaming.
Yeah, there is, right? Yeah. Cause I mean, that immediately sort of makes me think about, like, right. So you have that, like, tourist town dichotomy. It's like, I don't know, like, the tourist wants, like, probably, like, whatever's flashy, right? But, like, then the people that actually are going to live there, right? You don't want the good quality stuff. Cause I mean, you could definitely play with that. It's like, yeah, I mean, even if it's sort of just in fiction and very narratively driven, right? Like, if your players sort of, like, dig into that a little bit, like, oh, I want to go where, you know, where do the locals go to get, like, you know, get stuff actually done, right? Yeah. Like, then I think that's like, they're giving you a gift right there to really just kind of, yeah, go deep, deep into it and just put a little bit of flavor on it.
Have you ever played a video game where, like, vendor inventory got upgraded and improved as you made your way through the game? Like, the Dark Souls games kind of do this. Like, a lot of games will represent your good reputation or something with, like, a discount at stores. But I always kind of like it when hitting, you know, a certain reputation level means now you can buy, like, +2 weapons or, you know, or something like that. It's usually, I can't think of times when it's done in a really evocative way, but I always like to imagine that, yeah, I'm, like, getting deeper into the real, like, the real economy of this place.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that I've always wanted to do, and I don't have the chops to really pull it off or the time, is to, right. Like, there's the trope of, like, going to clear out a dungeon, right. Or something like that. That's, like, nearby a town. Right. Like, I'd love to take that and really kind of stretch it more. Cause it's like, okay, so you cleared out this dungeon. Maybe that allows for mining of a new ore. Right. So you think about, like, over time, it's like, what's that going to do? It's like, you know, for the economy, like, again, now it's safer to travel back and forth because there isn't, you know, goblins attacking you all the time. Maybe you have access to new materials that you've never been able to get access to before. So suddenly this town goes from, like, we only have stone that we can get from the quarry over there that's not guarded by goblins, to, like, oh, we can get iron ore really easily because it's in that, you know, dungeon. You know, it's like that would really change things quite a bit for a town that's sort of out on the outskirts. Quite a bit, but again, you get into like a, how do you track that sort of stuff? But I think for, like, the fiction, right, it doesn't have to be a lot of things, right? It could just be very simple like that. Like, what you're saying is, oh, you cleared out that thing, and then the next time you come back, hey, now we have broadswords, you know, +2 broadswords or whatever, you know, available in the shop.
Well, totally. I'm glad you shared that. I'm a little disappointed. Listeners can't see this, of course. So I'm disappointed you're not wearing the suit for the podcast recording. I feel a little disrespected, but it's okay.
That's fine. I mean, you know, normally I'm in a tuxedo, so I do apologize for that. Yeah. I'm because of just how things are going this week, I will be picking it up tomorrow about an hour before I have to leave for a trip into which I absolutely need this thing to fit and work well.
Well, so, I'm glad that there's nothing that could go wrong or derail this right from the very beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no, it's going to go perfectly well. Cause again, I've got Lou on my side. So yeah.
Well, that's really fun, Chris. Thank you for sharing. So I know both of us are kind of in the middle of some fairly hectic stuff. So this is going to be a shorter episode than usual. And we're not going to roll on the table of topics, although I do have something I mentioned in a previous episode that I thought might be fun just to unpack.
Yeah,
I don't have a big point to make. It's just something I have learned about my own and my gaming group's sort of what clicks for us at the table.
Okay. Yeah.
So do you want to sit back for a sec while I recount
the tedious tale of my
search to find a better Cthulhu rule set?
Oh my goodness. Yes, I do want to hear this.
Okay, well, don't get too excited. But so, I mean, for like, 30 years of my life, I have run Call of Cthulhu using the much respected Call of Cthulhu system, which is it's called basic role playing. It's built around a D100 role. And one of the reasons people often cite it as a really intuitive game system is that it's just really easy to look at your character sheet and understand what your odds of success are. If you have a skill of 40, it means you need to roll a 40 or below on a D100. It's a 40% chance. That's like everyone grasps that, right? Whether you're good at math or not, like that's pretty easy. So, but I just for probably a year or two, I have just really been struggling to be excited by this. And the point of this conversation is not to bag on the Call of Cthulhu rule system. So, long story short, I considered about every other kind of Cthulhu or supernatural, investigation rule system that there is out there to switch my home Cthulhu game to. And I found one that clicked, and the way that it clicked just has had my brain spinning for like the last month or two.
Oh.
We're using a version of the 2D20 rule system that Modiphius has a bunch of games set in this. So
okay.
I'm using the version of it that's in the game, a game called Octoon Cthulhu, and I've stripped most of the extra stuff of it out down to just the base mechanic. And here is what like changed our home game and got me enthused. It was that die rolls are more fun for my game group and for me when you can manipulate the die roll like in a gamey way. Mm-hmm. Rather than just like rolling the dice like it's a calculation, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So that makes a ton in this of system, sense, yeah. Like, I mean, there's a million systems like this out there. I'm not saying the 2D20 system is the only one that does it, but in the 2D20 system, you know, the act of rolling a die is a back and forth negotiation with the GM. Mm-hmm. The GM sets some difficulty parameters. The players pull out some dice. The players can spend some resources to pull in extra dice. They can scour their character sheet for things that will like not add extra dice, but will improve like the results of a success. The GM can respond by using some of his or her resources to, you know, add bad dice into the dice pool or, present obstacles or subvert player successes. And that all sounds complicated, but it, like I said, I have stripped the system down. I've stripped a lot of kind of the extra options because I don't want a 30-minute conversation every time we roll the dice. But I will just say, just for me, and I would like to hear what you think of this. Like this has been like a revelation for me. Just the realization that for me, I love it when die rolling A is an interactive experience with the players. Like a negotiation, and when there's like a game, just a straight up game element like to it, even if that game element comes at the expense of, you know, I guess quote realism or quote immersion. So I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Do Is there an element where they can kind of, I don't know, can they bluff you into using more of your, I don't know, like making it harder on them, and then the next time they roll, it's easier in some way? Like, is it a limited resource for you to add?
It is a limited resource, yes.
Yeah.
So both sides, the GM and the players, are deciding how much they want to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what resources, what limited resources each side is willing to commit to come out the victor in the die roll.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's not revolutionary. There's a trillion games that do that. But the vast majority of my game life, I have been using systems that just, you have one way of determining the result, and it's to roll basically the same mm-hmm. die. Yeah. And it's not that players and the GM can't go into that die roll experience kind of giving it different levels of, like, adding their own stakes to it and stuff like that. So I'm not, yeah. But I don't know. I just personally like it when there's a die pool involved, in a way then to kind of mess with that die pool, both the players and the GM. So I don't know, like, what is that, how, what's the kind of the die mechanic in most of the games that you run or plan?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, I'm really glad that you found that system, because, like, I am with you that the kind of the straight percentile roll, like, doesn't really do it for me either. Yeah. Cause it does feel very calculated. It's like feels a little bit more like you're solving a math equation every time you're rolling. And then two, it's also like, I get down to, like, then I question whether you really get a lot of value out of the tens digit in that too. It's like, do you really need to have 43% and 47%, right? Like, or really could it just be like, I don't know, yeah, a D10, right? You know, single D10, you just have kind of stats 1 through 10 or something, right? So, like, I think there's a question you can start asking about that, about, like, how much is it really giving you to have these individual percentage points and stuff. But yeah, so there's that side of it. But then, I mean, I think what you're hitting on is really great of that interactivity between the GM and the players, of, like, that push pull. The game that I'm playing in right now that Matt is running, the system very much feels like that. Like, we have tools at our disposal to sort of, like, juice the number of die that we're rolling to, like, really make sure that there's a success. And at the same token, like, the GM has ways to kind of interfere and make things harder for us there. So that's sort of the serpentine. And I know Matt has like hacked it a little bit, a little bit more on top of what,
when you do that, when you spend resources to make it more likely that you succeed, is it important to you that you be able to sort of justify that in the fiction of the game, if that makes sense? You know, if, like, you, whatever, if you're adding two dice to the die roll, is it important for you to identify what those represent, like, in the fiction of the game?
Yes, it is important to me, right? And I think it's important to, you know, the players that I'm playing with in this game too, right? So it's not just like you have ways that you can add die by spending points, but the points have to sort of relate back to what you're trying to do, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, so if you want to use, I don't know, like, there's a ability called our intimidation, right? Like, right. So, like, if you're going to, like, add that to it, right, that's going to naturally sort of, you should kind of tell the story about, like, how, how that adds to the role. Or if you're deciding to use, like, a help action, right? So, like, in that system, right, like, you can roll, and then you can decide, like, okay, I succeeded, so I'm just going to give you my hit die, basically hand them to the next person. So then they have to succeed, but then if they succeed, then they get to roll additional die to, like, do that. Like, so in those, when we do that, like, we're very much trying to justify it, and, like, you're talking about, like, how you're going to help too. And it's really fun because it adds so much flavor to, like, what the story that's going on. There very much is the, like, the mathematical tactical side of it too, where we're trying to, like, you know, maximize, you know, whatever, because there's, you know, there's benefits to stacking the dice like that. It's really funny because for the most part, the group is, I would say, a lot more narrative focused than it is mechanic focused. But when we turn it on, when we're like, we really need to make this work, like, it's fun seeing everybody's brains start to spin about,
isn't,
like,
that, okay, a, well, fun experience. Yeah.
It's so cool. Yeah. Right. Cause, like, you're still sort of like, you have it, like, you're still trying to figure out, like, narratively how it works together. But at the same time, you're just like, we're just getting like fistful of D6s, right? To just like make this yeah. giant roll, right? Like, you know, just like handing them off to each other. And it's just like this big hit. And you can just, like, there's excitement at the table when that happens too. And I'm sure Matt enjoys it a lot. And then he also enjoys being able to like turn it around and be like, and, but also on my end, I get to just kind of do this response too.
There's one more aspect of it I wanted to call out, and then I know we want to wrap up here, but, and that is, I've started breaking like a GMing rule that I have followed kind of religiously since I was a kid. Ooh. And that is I've started letting the players just tell me what skill they're using or, what skill they're using to accomplish something. Mm. Like I remember like way back, I mean, I've always had this idea internalized that you needed the player to first tell you like what in fiction they were trying to do. And then you would make the call as to, okay, that's yes, a strength role. But I've started just straight up asking the players what skill they want to use and not really worrying if that's a skill that the game system actually has assigned to use to resolve this kind of conflict, right?
Yeah.
So if like, if they have whatever, if they have a engineering skill, I'm actually okay if then when they make an attack, if they want to use their engineering skill, I have found you get some really creative in a good way. Like, sure, tell me why you're using engineering to like punch this guy out instead of like the fighting skill, which is obviously what the game system wants you to use. And I mean, I could, this requires trust, you know, with your players that people aren't just going to abuse it. And yeah, I mean, it does mean that the players are always trying to use their best skills to do everything. Mm-hmm. But I found that's like, that's pretty fun and funny, like more than it is like, maybe it's not realistic, but it certainly has added a lot to the game. So
yeah,
that's great. Those two things together have like really made something click for me. And I guess I just wanted to share. So
that's cool. Yeah. I remember playing with you, I think at the first roll for Topicon, you were, I don't remember what you were doing exactly, but like, I remember being surprised that you like, you didn't allow us to sort of pick the skill.
Yeah.
Or something, or there was like a perception check or something like that. And like, you just rolled for us instead. Yeah. And it was like, I just remember being like, what? Oh, hey, like, you know, just like this confusing sense of like, I never should have been able to roll that like myself.
Yeah.
And like, but also like, I always roll that for myself. Why are you getting to roll it? Like, you know, yeah. But it was, you know, it did make me think quite a bit of like, oh, like, I mean, it would make sense, right? If this is supposed to be something that like you're not sure if you're going to see, you know, like why wouldn't the GM just roll it for you? But yeah, anyway, so like that aside, like, I mean, I think your instinct there, I think is right for like, if you're going for the fun, like, yeah, just have the players try to justify it some way. You know, if they can't, you can always just say like, okay, well, you don't get it this time, but
And I mean, obviously this would not work in an awful lot of games, and like it's highly dependent on the atmosphere at your table. So I've been loosening up on that. So I don't know. Just wanted to kind of do a little check in on how my GMs.
That's really great.
GMing.
I know we're trying to wrap up, but I guess my one other question is like, so when you switch systems, did you like just redo their character sheets for them, or did you like, what did you do? Yeah.
Yep. Okay. I just gave them new character sheets. So
No complaints.
No complaints. Nope.
Yeah. No. Sometimes you just like, you gotta like, I don't know. It's like, I think we've joked about in the past about like, if you're going to run a fantasy game for someone for the first time, like just call whatever it is D&D and run Dungeon World or whatever. Like no one will care.
So when we first tried it out, I did pitch it as like, hey, I want to try out a new thing. Cause you do get a little of excitement. Like, I think there's some excitement that can overcome that feeling of like, oh man, we have to learn a new system. But if you're testing it out, that feels a little more exciting. So
I did
milk that a little bit, and it nice. And the players are great. So
yeah, that's cool. Lastly, that's awesome. All right, well, I think we should wrap it up there. Thanks for that quick conversation. So we'll be back. I mean, we're gonna be recording through the summer sort of as normal, but this week just in particular, we're both kind of slammed for getting ready for travel. I think that will do it for, oh, the only other thing that I wanted to mention is, so I finished The Goldfinch. I've been talking about this on the podcast here and there. So I just wanted to kind of, you know, make sure that everybody could get the closure that they need to know that I finished it. It was really good. I know it's a book that you have started and stopped before. We chatted a little bit. I think it might be worth you making another run at. I mean, you can, right? There's a lot of books in the world. So, you know, make your decision how you will. I enjoyed it just, way more than I thought I would. It became one of those books where it was like trying to find time to read. For me,
I'm envious of that. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen a lot. It doesn't happen with every book, but every once in a while I'll get one where I'm like, okay, like I need to, you know, kind of clear my schedule as much as possible, which is hard because it was like a 900 page book or whatever. So it's like, you're like, oh, cool. I'm almost done. I've got 200 more pages. Right.
It's yeah.
Like, yeah. So it was good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I think if I had read it as an English major, I would have like not shut up about it. It's very much a book that's like, I don't know, it kind of got my like literature, you know, English literature brain going quite a bit of like, oh, there's all these cool themes that I want to talk about and I talk about with everybody. I'm like, no one wants to hear that. So
I know she's a great writer. I don't know why I bounced off that book, but I liked other stuff she's done. So by the way, are you setting a bad precedent? I mean, when you come on the show and you acknowledge having finished a book, you are kind of exposing all of those other books we excitedly talked about how we were starting. And then, I mean, when was the last time I mentioned how I'm doing on Moby Dick, right?
I mean, you know, I wasn't going to say it. Yeah.
So I think you are, I'm glad you brought this up, but I feel like you're stabbing us. You're shooting us in the foot here going forward as far as our literary reputation goes.
someone go update the wiki on the progress. You know, that's right. Andy's progress on Moby Dick. Yeah. you will be thrilled to know that I have rolled straight from, you know, the high-minded Pulitzer winning The Goldfinch to a book called Questland, which as far as I can tell so far is about a professor who gets like sucked into this like D&D world. The cover is exactly what you might think. There's a D20 on the cover of it. It is, I'm enjoying it like as much as The Goldfinch, and it's written in very much a different style. I'll say that much. So,
I want to see a side by side comparison review of those two books in a future.
Yeah. There's no highbrow. There's no lowbrow. There's only what you like. So
that's right. Exactly.
All right. Okay. That does it for us. We're Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media podcasting network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, is on hiatus for a couple months. But you can go listen to them. I just, I think the last one they put out right before they went on hiatus was them doing a couple character sheets in different OSR campaigns, which was really fun to listen to. And it made me excited to play some OSR someday. So go check that out. And you can also check out Andy and John on Zombie Strains, the podcast, which is always great. I think I might have mentioned last time that you made me want to actually go seek out one of the movies that you were reviewing, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. So I've watched the first part of it. It's very funny. It's very good. I can't wait to finish it up when I get a chance. So
good. All right.
Yeah, successful podcast. And then I'm also looking forward to, you guys just put one out. I'm on, was it Jacuzzi?
The silent French movie.
Like, talk about a movie podcast. The silent French movie from 1920 early zombie film. So I'm excited to listen to that.
We ended up loving Jacuzzi, but I will let you imagine what my internal reaction to first hearing that we were going to be watching a silent French movie was when our producer first announced it to us.
So. Yes. That's great. Cool. All right. Well, that does it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.